Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
Well, it is the very first prosecution of a former Guantanamo Bay detainee, and it looks like there is already a wrinkle in the plan. The Obama administration could have been dealt a big blow in this, what people are calling a test case. The federal judge has barred prosecutors from using a crucial witness in the trial of Ahmed Gilani. Gilani faces charges in the deadly 1998 bombings of two U.S. embassies in East Africa. And help us to sort through the legal ambiguities and, I guess, clarities also is Vijay Padmanabhan. He's a visiting professor at Cardozo School of Law. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, let's talk first about why this key witness was barred. They say it's because his testimony was coerced. Was that because of what Dick Cheney referred to as enhanced interrogation techniques?
Well, to be clear, what has happened is that Mr. Gailani himself was subjected to enhanced interrogation techniques, and he revealed the identity of this witness during the course of that interrogation. And so as a consequence of that, nothing that's derived from that original testimony is admissible at trial. So it's not that this witness was coerced as much as Mr. Gailani gave the information that led the prosecutors to find this witness.
And what is the significance of that decision? The judge has said it's a violation of the Constitution, but not necessarily – he's not commenting on the use of enhanced interrogation techniques, or he is?
Oh, well, the government in this case has conceded the fact that there was some enhanced interrogation that has occurred. The court has never been asked to rule on whether that was legal or illegal. What the court is saying is that anytime you use coercive techniques against someone and they then give you information that you have no independent way to get, well, it's impossible to use that. It's fruit of the poisonous tree.
Okay. And one of the reasons that this is big news is because, of course, this is supposedly the test case for future prosecutions of former Guantanamo Bay detainees. And many people are saying that perhaps that there would have been a different result if this had been tried in a military tribunal, as I assume was originally intended. Is that the case? Would this witness have been allowed in a military tribunal as opposed to a civilian court?
Well, you know, it's funny. A lot of people are asserting that this morning, but the truth is we have no idea.
Do we know if that was the original intent to try him in a military tribunal even?
Yes, it was. Original intent was to try him in a military tribunal. However, Once the Supreme Court decided in Boumediene that there are some set of constitutional rights that do attach to detainees held at Guantanamo Bay, we simply don't know how the Fifth Amendment would be applied to a situation like this in a military commission. And we wouldn't know until there was a decision on this question by a military commission that would be appealed all the way to the civilian courts.
The media reports seem to suggest that the Justice Department was caught off guard here. The Obama administration, the Obama campaign, spoke against military tribunals, campaigned against the kind of tactics the Bush administration used. They seem to have adopted most of them. Why would they have expected this to turn out any differently if indeed they did?
Well, first of all, there's a close legal question about whether or not there's an independent basis upon which the prosecutors could have acquired this testimony. So the government was making the argument that in this case, this person came forward voluntarily. He himself wasn't coerced in any way. And so there was a separation between what happened to Gailani and this person appearing in court. But one other point that's worth making that's not being made this morning is that there's actually an international legal obligation on the part of the United States not to use any evidence obtained through torture in legal proceedings. And so
that's a doctrine of international law, not constitutional.
Correct.
Law.
It's a doctrine of international law, but it's binding in military commissions every bit as much as it's binding in federal court, and it's something that is worth considering in terms of thinking about how a military judge might ultimately rule on seeing the same evidence that was brought in front of a military
Meaning that we could have seen the same decision out of a military tribunal as we are from a civilian court.
Exactly.
Well, we're speaking to Vijay Padmanabhan, a visiting professor at Cardozo School of Law. So tell us what this actually means for the future of prosecutions of Guantanamo Bay detainees. Is this a major loss for the prosecution?
Well, the prosecution, you know, it's an important witness in this particular case. But I think looking forward, the real question is going to be the government is going to need to have enough evidence to introduce in court that is separated from any enhanced interrogation that was done of the detainee. And so this is going to force prosecutors to go back, look carefully at the case, and think about what's the connection between any detainee abuse that was conducted and the information that we want to present at trial.
It seems to go even beyond that. I mean, you viewed the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine a moment ago, where the idea is if it's tainted at all, then the whole body of evidence gets thrown out. It seems to me that the court is signaling that it's conceivable that a lot of these prosecutions, the whole tree is poisoned, and that there's no way to separate.
Well, I think it really depends on the – I wouldn't go that far. I think it really depends on the kind of evidence that you're talking about. What made this situation very unique is that the prosecutors had never heard of this particular man other than when Gailani revealed his name. And there's no evidence to suggest the government could have learned of his name. He's a small operator of a store. It's very difficult to have located him. If, on the other hand, you have evidence that you independently could have found without the mistreatment, well, then in that situation, the evidence would be admissible.
And what makes it significant is that he revealed the name during a session of enhanced interrogation techniques.
But this is the understanding. Of course, keep in mind, the government has not contested that fact, and it's not been proven in court. So we don't know for sure exactly when he revealed it, but we can assume that's probably the case.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you heard the comment that we played from Dick Cheney, in which he said that all of these enhanced interrogation techniques were approved by the Department of Justice. But that suggests that the Department of Justice, if that's true, was looking forward to future prosecutions and not seeing an issue over information or evidence that was brought out of these sessions of enhanced interrogation techniques, which would mean that there's been a change in policy from the Department
John
of Justice.
John Yoo is no longer there, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think, unfortunately, the Justice Department did not think forward to prosecutions. If you go back in time to when all this was going on, right after the 9/11 attacks, the idea was these individuals did not have constitutional rights. If they were going to ever be prosecuted, it would be in front of a military tribunal in more of a summary fashion as opposed to what we're used to in terms of trial rights. So there's been a huge evolution in the law since these interrogations took place, including all the Supreme Court decisions establishing rights for enemy combatants. So I think, in fairness to the Justice Department, I don't think they anticipated the situation of picking somebody up, interrogating him in this way, and then seeking to prosecute him where the individual had the full panoply of constitutional rights.
Before we go, are any of these points going to end up back in front of the Supreme Court?
It's a very good chance they will.
Okay. Vijay Padmanabhan, visiting professor at Cardozo School of Law. He's talking about the very first trial of a former Guantanamo Bay detainee. In the trial of Ahmed Gailani, the federal judge has barred prosecutors from using the testimony of a witness whose name was revealed during so-called enhanced interrogation techniques.